AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today is Thursday, December 28th. Merry Christmas, soon to be Happy New Year. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Guys, we got a lot going on tonight. Everyone, please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Talk to us. We want to talk back to you. And by the way, hit that share button. We want you to share this. Get this out to everybody. Bowl season half over. NFL has 2 weeks left. Week 16 in the books. Jets beat Washington. Giants lose to Philly. We got some big outcomes and some big games to talk about. Yamamoto is a Dodger. Disappointing both Yankee and Met fans alike. And we're going to go around the world. We got a lot of stuff going on. Guys, we're going to start it with the Jets.
Sounded like you were caught between Yamamoto and Netanyahu. But anyway, we go.
A little tongue-tied there, but...
He sounded like me trying to pronounce his name.
It's the way where I'm sorry, G. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. It is Yoshinobu Yamamoto. It's not easy to pronounce that, but anyway. Jets beat the Reds. Look at me, the Redskins. Jets beat the Commanders 30-28. It's a Zuerlein 54-yard field goal last week with 5 seconds left. After blowing a 20-point third-quarter lead, Brissett led the comeback. Rodriguez had 2 running touchdowns. Not enough. Jets get the win. Kev, let's start with the Jets.
I mean, it was amazing watching the first quarter and watching the team implode worse than the Jets usually implode with interceptions and fumbles and blocked punts and everything else. And they jump up 27-7. The good things, you know, Breece Hall, monster game for him. 95 yards rushing, 2 touchdowns, 96 yards receiving. I mean, they got him the ball 32 times. They let Izzy Abanaconda play and actually get some meaningful carries. 9 carries, 43 yards. So both of them averaged 4.8 yards per carry. And yet, despite running the ball probably the best we've run the ball all year, we have Trevor Siemian throwing the ball 49 times in this game. Why? Why? The key point was, you know, at the 27-7 third quarter, you know, Quincy gets a pickoff of Howell, who is just brutal. 6 for 22, 56 yards, 2 touchdowns. 2 interceptions, I mean, not 2 touchdowns. Just get the ball to 22. You know, they eventually get it to second goal at the 6, and Siemian throws a pass that, you know, I think I could have thrown that pass. That's how bad the pass was. Easily picked off, returned, tack on the horse collar, got down to the 29. Washington scores. Then the Jet offense decides to start bogging down. Next drive, I was in and out in some of the game here. It's Christmas Eve, running some errands. But, you know, I did see, you know, the pass interference on Reed. I'm still looking for the pass interference. that was in the end zone. Set him up to the 1. Scored a touchdown. Next drive for Washington started off with the Sauce Gardner pass interference. Eventually scored a touchdown. They take the lead. Just get the ball back. Breece Hall down the sideline. He gets hit before the ball gets there. And even Adam Archuleta, you don't hear any announcer say anything good about the Jets. Even Archuleta saying, based on what was called on the Jets, how come that's not a pass interference on the Commanders? But anyway, we force a punt. We get the defense actually makes the stop finally. We make enough plays to set up the Zuerlein for 54. I was just praying just to get anywhere near Zuerlein's range to kick the field goal, get the win. I don't care about draft position and everything else. You know, these guys are out there trying to win. I'm a Jeff, and I'm watching the game as best I can. I'm rooting for them to win, and they got the win. Darren?
Well, they blow the big lead, like you said. Siemian never really threw the ball downfield. He just kept checking down. It was like, it's just uncomfortable to watch. Breece's thing, like you talked about, he has two games now in his career for 95 receiving yards, 95 rushing yards in the same game. Second most, tied for second most all time, only behind Walter Payton, who has three in 190 games. Breece has done it in 22. It's an odd stat. I'm not comparing Breece Hall to Walter Payton or any of these other guys. But the biggest takeaway I get is this vaunted defense. This vaunted defense blows a 27-7 lead to Jacoby freaking Brissett. Come on. I know there's a couple phantom calls. I know there's a lot of bull that goes on. But this defense, I mean, and we're recording on Thursday, so they're playing the Browns right now and not looking good at all, except they just returned one for a score. But, I mean, but this is just horrible to talk about this defense being, like, elite or great. This defense doesn't stop the run, and this defense does not do a good job on the other side of Sauce Gardner. Gardner's been outstanding. Reed has not been outstanding. Whitehead's a mistake waiting to happen. He's awful. You know, Mosley blows coverages left and right, and they don't get consistent pass rush with all these great pass rushers. As a Jet fan, and again, like you said, Kev, I get 17 of these a year. I know they suck, but I'm going to root for my team 17 times a year, okay? I don't expect 18. I don't expect 19. I don't expect 20, and I sure as hell don't expect 21. I sit here and pray for my 17, even with a little optimism early in the year, and I talk playoffs and stuff. But in truth, what are we really expecting? What we're really expecting is to root for this team 17 times a year. And here's my thing, and correct me if I'm wrong on any of these, Kev. Jets set number two picks overall, Johnny Lamb Jones, Blair Thomas, Zach Wilson. Third pick of the draft for the New York Jets, Sam Darnold. Fourth pick of the draft, Dwayne Robertson. Fifth pick of the draft, Mark Sanchez. Sixth pick of the draft, Vernon Golston. Seventh pick of the draft was Mekhi Becton. Eighth pick, Dave Cadigan. Nine, D. Milliner. You know, and Kyle Brady, by the way. 10, Russell Carter. I mean, it doesn't matter where we pick. I mean, sometimes it works out great. Nick Mangold, unbelievable. Brickishaw, 4, fantastic. Garrett Wilson, Sauce Gardner, excellent. Breece Hall in the second round, awesome. But everybody worries about this draft pick position so much. There are so many busts at every position, from quarterback to O-line to D-line. And it's not just the Jets, it's every team. I mean, everybody's so worried about the draft pick. Like, we get 17 of these, and then everybody just wants to look forward to April? I worry about April and April. Right now I'm playing to win. Listen, you want to tell me it was horrible that they won the last game of the season and they lost the Trevor Lawrence pick for Zach Wilson? I'll grant you that, because you were going for the first pick. I got it. Outside of that, there's no chance at the first pick. Let it go. Okay.
The only time I ever openly rooted against the Jets were the two Rich Kotite years, when they were just so bad. You wanted them to finish so awfully that they had to fire Rich Kotite. And that was, it was more about firing Kotite than getting the pick.
The funny part was, you know, we fired Pete Carroll to get the Kotite.
I know. We're hiring Carroll.
I wish Carroll had some sort of coaching career that we could really model against.
Yeah.
So awful. Patriots also fired him. So it wasn't just us as geniuses, but unreal the way it goes. So honestly, and I'm going to ask you, Gino, because you root for the Commanders, who are just as bad as us. Do you root for wins or losses this time of year?
Losses. I want Caleb Williams.
So you root for the pick.
Right now, I'm rooting for Caleb Williams. Well, listen, once I know that we are officially eliminated and we have a chance for a very high pick, now I'm rooting for the pick.
Okay. I'm the opposite. I can't root for the pick.
Fine, Darren, but it's 4 wins. We're not doing anything.
Darren, you mentioned all the high draft pick busts that we've had. I think as Jet fans, we're so immune to having these awful, awful drafts, these terrible early draft picks, that we don't care about a draft pick at this point.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what, Kev, though? But you need to a little bit. I'm not telling you root against your team. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. But you need to, because although a lot of these picks are crapshoots, most of these good quarterbacks, most of these good quarterbacks are coming from higher picks. I'm not saying the 1 pick, I'm not saying the 2 pick, but most of them are coming from higher picks. And you got a better shot at a better player at the top of this draft than at the bottom of this draft.
But we know
who are the best three quarterbacks in the NFL right now? Who Who are the best three quarterbacks in the NFL right now, in your opinion? I, this isn't a trick question. I'm just curious what you think.
Just name your pick. I know where you're going, Darren. Name your top three, G.
I don't know.
I know you're going to put Jalen up there, no?
Jalen.
Second round pick. You might put Mahomes up there.
Mahomes.
Who was he, the 10th pick? He was the 10th pick of the draft. Would you put Purdy up there, who was the last pick of the draft? Maybe, maybe not.
Lamar.
Lamar Jackson, last pick of the late pick of the first round. I'm just saying. Yeah. Joe Burrow's a stud. Matthew Stafford's a stud. I'm not disagreeing that there are some guys that are just unbelievable. Jared Goff, I wouldn't call him a stud, but he's turned into something. Carson Wentz was the second pick. I mean, there is good and bad. You know, Trey Lance was a third pick. You know, Josh Allen was seven. And Donald was three. Yeah, absolutely.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be the quarterback, though. It could be a good player at another position.
No doubt.
So
I remember the Jets got Vernon Golston at six. We thought we had this elite pass rusher. He couldn't even get on the field. Couldn't learn the playbook.
I think when you are so bad that you're going to wind up with a chance for one or two, and you've got that franchise type quarterback out there, that's when you might root for the team to lose. But where the Jets are right now, with the way the record's been, even taking away the loss last week, I mean, they were 5-9 going in. You know they're picking somewhere between 7 and 10. At that point, they're not picking a quarterback because Rodgers is coming back. Whether he's healthy or not, we don't know. We'll see. But you know they're not going quarterback there. I don't think it matters too much where we pick at that point.
No, listen, I agree with you. Darren asked me about the Commanders.
And the same thing goes for the Giants, by the way, and every other team that's out of it. The other point I would make, though, on top of that, is as a Jet fan, knowing I don't have a second-round pick and watching the holes on this team, you know, depending on what's there, I'm already thinking about trading down and seeing if I can develop a second-round pick if somebody likes somebody really big at wherever we're picking between 7 and 11. You know, I'm just saying, you know, right now I just want to get more players. I need to fill up the roster. But that's where I am with the Jets. We don't have to waste too much time on this team. The vaunted defense is not vaunted. And you know what? I don't know if they're tired. I don't know if they've given up. I don't know if they're frustrated. But what I saw last week did not impress me. And like you said, I was in and out of this game more than I will be in and out of any game all year just because it is Christmas Eve. Kev?
We're recording this is late first half. They've now – the defense, 4 touchdowns allowed in the first half here, 3 touchdowns the second half last week. That's 7 touchdowns over the course of a full game.
Point of parliamentary procedure. One was a defensive interception return for a score. For both teams.
Yeah.
Each team has scored it, so there's only three.
You're
ahead of me. Okay, they just scored another one.
We're about a minute and a half ahead of us.
I didn't see it. My bad.
I already factored in the pick six.
Yep. I did not know you did that because it was at that point, it was only 27-14 where I'm watching. So I'm a little bit behind.
That's 49 points in the full game.
Yeah, and passing and running. It doesn't really matter. So
against Jacoby Brissett and Joe Flacco.
Yeah, and pretty much, and it's they can't cover a tight end. They can't cover a running back.
All right.
That's what it comes down to. G?
We'll move to the other New York team, the Giants. They lost to Philly 33-25. They're at 5-10. Philly's at 11-4. They lost 33-25. DeVito got pulled after a bad start. Tyrod Taylor came into the game. He got picked off on a 26-yard interception on the end zone on the final play. Big play late in the game was an Adoree Jackson 76-yard interception for a touchdown. Barkley had the 2-point conversion. They cut it to 20-18. Wasn't enough in the end. Any comments on the Giants, guys?
Well, Kev? Philly did a good job of coming right back after that pick six to score their own touchdown to get it back to 9 points and sort of keep the Giants from really having the ball with a chance to tie it or win it until the very last drive. Philly did enough to hang on to win. And I think Tommy DeVito, maybe his head got a little bit too big at times when you see some of the stuff in the press and, you know, some of the stuff he's pulling with the pizza owners and, you know, showing up or not showing up or everything else. It's like, you know, unfortunately, where we live, you know, he made too big a deal. As we all said on this podcast, he's done enough to prove that he is an NFL quarterback, likely a backup. But that's it.
At best.
I think you know, his best, head was getting a little best. And his head was getting a little too big for the talent level he has.
I think it was his family. I think it was his agent, all that stuff. Kid had his 5 minutes. He had his 5 minutes, the whole Cutlet thing. There was a reason he was an undrafted free agent. He showed that he can do certain things and move a team down a little bit. And he also showed that if he plays too many games in a row, teams can pick him apart. Like 2 weeks ago, I loved the Saints against him. I knew he was going to struggle in that game. Didn't expect much out of him for the Eagles. Tyrod gives him the best chance, but now with 2 weeks to go in the season, do you make the move? Do you bench DeVito for Tyrod? They have, but would you guys agree with that decision at the stage of the season or no?
For next week, no, I wouldn't have. They're playing.
I don't think I would have either.
What do they got next week?
They have the Rams.
They have the Rams.
They have the Rams. Yeah, that's not a team that Rams necessarily. The Rams game, I would let DeVito play. If he sunk up the joint going against the Eagles again when the Eagles are still playing for something, I may have gone back to Taylor for the last game.
Well, no, the Eagles is the last game. Rams and
Eagles. The last game.
Yeah, but Rams this week. I would have had DeVito win this week for the Rams.
Okay.
If DeVito sunk up the joint again, I would have gone back to Taylor for the Eagles game for the end just so that you don't crush DeVito.
But here's the question, though, because it becomes integrity now. These teams are both fighting for playoff spots. Do you feel like it's your responsibility to play your best team if you think Tyrod is the guy, or do you not? That's really what it comes down to in these situations.
Your responsibility is to your own team.
Listen, they're 5-10. I agree with Kev. I mean, if I'm the Giants, I'm sending DeVito back out there. Again,
I don't disagree with you guys either. I just was curious if you take it seriously, that whole thing.
If he's horrible after a quarter and a half, then pull him. But,
yeah.
Playing Tyrod Taylor at 5-10, that's not doing anything for you. Maybe you'll learn to see if this kid does have anything to be your number two next year going into the year. Maybe he doesn't. I mean,
You know what? If these teams are so damn concerned, if the Eagles are so concerned, don't go in and lose to the Jets. Rams, find another win somewhere earlier where it doesn't matter who the Giants play at quarterback this week.
Yeah. Well, listen, I don't think any team owes any other team anything. You look out for your own franchise. But I was just asking that question because it's something that comes up from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's start going around the NFL. We're going to start at the top of the AFC. Baltimore is now in the one spot at 12-3. They beat the Niners 33-19. Lamar 252-2. He ran 7 times for 45 yards. In the loss, San Francisco, Purdy had 4 interceptions, 3 interceptions on the first 4 drives, which to me was really surprising. And we talked about this a couple of times. Kev actually mentioned it. Kev, this was your pick. McCaffrey, he's still the MVP at this point. Someone talk me out of it if I'm wrong, but he's got 1,935 yards and 21 touchdowns through this point of the season with 2 games left. San Francisco falls to 11-4. There's a 3-way tie in the NFC for the top spot at the moment. We'll come back to that in a minute. Any comments on Baltimore, guys, or the Niners?
I was going to say, this game backed up Darren's point that he's made the last 2-3 weeks. This San Francisco defense is not that good.
Yep.
At 5-0 after the safety and the field goal, the Ravens then the next 7 drives had 4 field goals and 3 touchdowns. At some point, as bad as Purdy played and as bad as the offense was looking, at some point the San Fran defense has got to step up and make a stop and stop the bleeding. Yeah. And they never did.
Nope.
And this defense, Darren's mentioned the last couple of weeks, have not looked all that good.
I actually said the same thing about the Ravens, and I was proven wrong on them. They had a really nice game. I just think you can move the ball against both teams. Just one of those things where I found it to be completely surprising how Purdy went from MVP contender to just like he's not even in consideration after a 4 interception on a primetime game. You just drop that quickly. You drop like a stone, just the way it works.
Yep. Yeah.
One bad game is the worst game he's ever played, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like, wow.
Probably at any level.
Yeah.
All right. In the 2 spot in the AFC are the Dolphins at 11-4. They beat Dallas 22-20. It was a Jason Sanders. It was his 5th field goal. This one has time expired. Tua 293 and one touchdown. In the loss, Dak had 253 yards and two touchdowns. Dallas struggled to run the ball. They had 25 carries, only had 97 yards. Any comments on the Dolphins or the Cowboys, guys?
I mean, to me, the more I watch the Dolphins play, this is really just Hill. When Hill is not the factor on this team, this offense, I mean, the Jet game notwithstanding, this offense and Tua does not really frighten me as much, except when Hill is on the field. Hill opens up the running game. Hill opens up the passing game. Hill makes coverages looser and allows those lollipops to land. I'm not trying to kill Tua because I think he's a very good quarterback. But watching this game, you're saying to yourself, wow, Hill's presence on the field is such a difference maker. On the other side of the ball, Dallas on the road just does not play with that same aggression on defense, or they get blocked better. I don't know how else to put it. It just seems like they don't have that same intensity on the road. At home, they look like world beaters. On the road, they just don't seem to get after you as much. Jeff?
What got me, though, was, you know, they mentioned the stat today. I saw Micah Parsons has not drawn a holding penalty in 38 quarters.
I mean, that's a joke.
I mean, Micah Parsons gets to the quarterback regularly. How is he not getting held at least once a game?
And he's complaining about it.
He should.
I agree.
I mean, and I hate the Cowboys. I can't believe how hard I was rooting for the Cowboys.
I was rooting for the Cowboys hard, too. It was killing me.
It was killing me. I was like, God, I can't believe I'm rooting for Dallas. But, you know, here I am rooting for Dallas. And,
Kevin and I in our early 20s used to go to sports bars on Sundays to watch all the games. And the Cowboys were at the top of the world, and all their fans would be standing there. We just hated every single one of them. And now it's just, you know, now I'm rooting for them on a – I haven't rooted for them, I don't think, since the Leon Lett game.
I'll leave it there. I remember the midnight – the Kotite years. Dallas was playing at the Jets, and Dallas was kicking our ass. And
I remember that.
And the Cowboys are coming out, lining up for the kickoff, and their players are all coming out, you know, raise the roof. And three quarters at least of the stadium were standing up cheering. I'm looking around going, where the hell are we?
We had who had the big 97-yard punt return in that game, 98? Somebody had a huge punt return for the Jets. That was like our only show of offense early on. I can't remember who it was. But anyway, it was one of those type of things.
Yeah, that's the awful. Dolphins and Cowboys.
So that's the 1-2 in the AFC. Baltimore at 12-3, Miami at 11-4. By the way, they play each other this week, so we're going to see where that lands. Yep. In the 3 spot is Kansas City at 9-6. They lost to the Las Vegas Raiders 14-20. Mahomes 27-44 with 235 and a touchdown and interception. He was not good. Butker missed a field goal. The Raiders on that side, they had two defensive touchdowns. It was a 9-yard fumble and a 22-yard interception for TDs. They became the first NFL team since 2000 to win without completing a pass after the first quarter. Okay, a little craziness. They're at 7-8. They're at the bottom of the outside looking in, but that's where Kansas City stands. Kansas City's not looking good right now. Anything on Kansas City, Darren?
Well, I mean, the whole thing was, again, back-to-back drives. The Chiefs have the lead. They fumble on like a trick play, and then the next play, Mahomes got picked. It was a bad pass, got picked. Like you said, O'Connell did not complete a pass after the first quarter, threw for 62 yards. The defense actually, like I've been saying all year, the defense played well for the most part, except for that last drive. They could not get off the field against the Raiders to get the ball back. But I think they were pretty beat by that point. But if you take away the two defensive touchdowns, they outscored them 7-6. It was just one of those type of games where Chiefs did not look good, and yet usually this is a game that they find a way to win. Right now, the Chiefs passing game's in disarray. Pacheco got hurt again. The running game is not great. And I think that they thought that they can get away with this whole thing by putting a little too much on Mahomes and not really worrying about the other weapons he would have. And if Kelsey's going to be mediocre and double covered when he's open, not really make plays. You know, what's the one missing ingredient from this team from last year? Eric Bieniemy. I'm not trying to say it's a big deal, but there's a certain toughness Bieniemy brings that Nagy doesn't. Yep. And that's really where the difference lies to me. And I think that this team doesn't have the discipline Andy comes up to plays. Bieniemy was yelling at everybody. Right now, Andy comes up to plays and nobody's yelling and no one's accountable. And, you know, right now the Chiefs, you know, they'll still probably win the division. They'd have to lose out. Raiders would have to win out, or the Broncos would have to win out in order for it to happen that way. But, you know, this is not a scary team to anybody right now.
All right.
What do you think of the job that Antonio Pierce has done for the Raiders?
Excellent.
Do you think he deserves to be the head coach?
I do. Well, this is, like I said a couple weeks ago with Mike McDaniel, I don't want these nerdy. I want guys that played. I don't love this McVay. I don't love at least Shanahan and McVay's fathers were coaches and they grew up in football. But I mean, you watch these freaking little computer nerds drawing up things. I want guys that actually played. Antonio Pierce is a leader.
If I play football, you know, which I don't, I never did. But you know, to me, he's the type of guy that you'd want to run through a brick wall for, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Shouldn't he be named the head coach today?
I would have done it right after that game. Right after that game on Sunday.
Here's the problem: the Rooney Rule.
Oh, you have to interview everybody.
The Raiders still have to go out and interview two minority candidates from outside the organization, even if they want to hire Antonio Pierce.
That's true. That is true.
So you gotta set up two sham interviews?
Basically.
It's a whole other discussion. We won't get into that now, but it's like, you know, you've got the candidate here. He's definitely proven that he deserves a job. And you've got to set up this thing to satisfy some stupid rule. I don't know.
No, you're right. I agree with you on that.
All right. The fourth spot is Jacksonville. They lost their fourth straight to Tampa Bay. 30-12. They were helped to 37 yards rushing. Trevor Lawrence threw two interceptions before leaving in the fourth quarter with a shoulder injury. On the flip side, Tampa Bay won their fourth straight. Mayfield, 283-2. This was the good side of the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde theory. Evans had two touchdowns, 86 yards receiving. They're also 8-7. And by the way, they're also in the fourth spot in the NFC. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, question you got to start asking yourself, is Lawrence hurt or just not as good as we think he is?
I'm going to say
it's just a question.
Now.
I mean,
yeah,
I get that he's hurt, but if you look at his stats career-wise, they don't blow you away any different than Daniel Jones. I mean, he has not been consistently excellent. He's had stretches. I agree with you. He's banged up. I'm not going to say he's not, but it's time to start questioning if Trevor Lawrence is the superstar that everybody wants him to be.
I would agree with that, actually.
Yeah.
All right. Fifth spot in the AFC is Cleveland at 10-5. They beat Houston 36-22, 418 yards of offense. Flacco, 368 with three touchdowns, two interceptions. Amari Cooper had a huge game. He was 11 for 15 for 265 yards and two touchdowns. And as we learned, he's actually out today, playing tonight. Cleveland right now is up on the Jets 34-17. Cleveland and Houston, Stroud was still out. Keenum wasn't good. He threw for two interceptions. It looks like Stroud's going to be back this week. Houston needs him. They're at 8-7 on the outside looking in. Darren?
No field goal kicker, no problem for Cleveland. They just kept going for two or going for it on fourth down in the opposing team's side of the field and making it. I mean, you know, you got to be impressed. You know, you didn't go into the season saying, well, Cleveland's going to be this dynamic, unbelievable offense. You thought they'd be good. And then they lose Chubb. And then they lose Deshaun Watson. And it seems like the offense has only gotten better as the year has gone on. And I'm not trying to say Flacco is better than every quarterback they've had out there, but he's looked really good. And I think it really comes down to something that we talk about with the Jets all the time and Washington and the Giants. The Cleveland offensive line gives this guy time to throw, and therefore he looks really, really good. I'm not trying to kill Flacco in a negative way, but that offensive line is the reason why this team is playing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And David Njoku looks like he's coming out to be a star again now. We thought this could happen, and it did. Amari Cooper, when he's on the field, is just amazing right now. He's on fire. And Flacco's just chucking the ball all around. So Cleveland, they're at 10-5. They may go to 11-5 after tonight.
May?
They're in good shape. They're in good shape. Let's get the ball first on the second half.
All right, sixth spot in the AFC is Buffalo at 9-6. They beat the Chargers 24-22. Josh Allen threw a touchdown, ran two touchdowns. Tyler Bass hit the game-winning field goal with 28 seconds left. Buffalo turned the ball over three times to keep the Chargers in this game. Giff Smith, he had the Chargers hyped up and playing in this game, unlike what we've seen with the pass coach. Buffalo 9-6. They're going to be, we talked about this weeks and weeks ago. They're going to be trouble for one of these teams that gets in the 2, 3, or 4 seed. That's for sure.
They can still win this division.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Simply put, if Baltimore finds a way to beat Miami, which they're favored to do, I'm not saying it's going to happen, and then Buffalo wins this week against the Patriots, which they're expected to do, then we go to week 18 and they play each other, Buffalo would have the sweep on Miami, and they would get the, and they would actually win the division. Yeah. So it's you know, Buffalo's not that necessarily dead from being a two seed.
Absolutely not. Okay.
Imagine them being the sixth seed and having to go to Kansas City and playing the Chiefs. Do you think the Chiefs
would have that? That'd be amazing. Another epic game. Yeah. You think Buffalo's better right now, but it would still be an epic game.
Yeah. All right. In the seventh spot is Indianapolis. They lost to Atlanta 29-10. They were held to 262 yards of offense. Minshew wasn't great. Atlanta on the outside looking in, they went to Heinicke in that game. Koo had 5 field goals. Darren?
Atlanta's better when Heinicke plays. He does more than Ritter, and he doesn't have a strong an arm. He's just a smarter player. I don't understand. Arthur Smith is now the most confusing coach in the NFL. It was Staley, but he finally got fired. Now it's Arthur Smith.
Absolutely.
Who decides that never should Bijan Robinson get the ball enough. Don't throw the ball to Pitts and play a quarterback that can't play on the road. I don't understand it. So a little bit crazy. Kev?
Well, last 3 years, they've had top 10 picks on Pitts, on Drake London, and on Bijan Robinson. They refuse to get the ball to these three guys.
Well, London does get it more than the other two, but even still, not nearly as much as they should. They don't have a quarterback
to get
the damn ball.
Okay, so that's the top seven in the AFC. Outside looking in right now is Houston at 8-7. We talked about them. They lost to Cleveland. Cincinnati at 8-7. They lost to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh at 8-7. They beat Cincinnati with Mason Rudolph at quarterback. Denver at 7-8. They lost to New England in a horrible loss. And the Raiders still alive at 7-8. Any comments about the rest of those guys? Darren?
The one thing I'll say about Denver, I thought that they were going to run the table. Now they lost to New England at home, and now they've benched Russell Wilson, probably played his last game as a Bronco. He's guaranteed $39 million next year, and he's guaranteed $37 million the year after if he's injured. So they don't want him beyond next year. They almost might be willing to eat that $39 million, let him move on, and just make sure he doesn't get hurt where they owe him money for the following year. But you know, Sean Payton, you know, he's going to start alienating people on that roster. I mean, listen, Russell Wilson, whether you like him or not, was having a pretty good statistical year. It was a 22 touchdowns, 6 picks, something like that. Wasn't like he was killing them. And I'm a little surprised that there isn't a mutiny already in Denver on Payton, because he just doesn't seem to have any loyalty to anybody but himself. You know, as far as Pittsburgh, every time you think that they're done, they come up and rise up out of nowhere and beat a team that Jake Browning looked like he was just leading Cincinnati easily into the playoffs. And then all of a sudden now they haven't won a conference, a division game all year yet. They've yet to win a division game, Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Cincinnati was down 24-0 at the half in that game.
I mean, and I'm not that you expect a ton from Jake Browning, but he was playing really well. Cincinnati looked like the better squad going in, and Pittsburgh, would Mason Rudolph just dismantle them? You know, those are the two things that stood out to me in those games.
Pickens decided to show up and play.
He did.
He didn't stop. You know, he didn't hold out any. I don't want to play this play because it might get hurt.
Listen, the fact of the matter is, you get the guy involved early, he's going to play. It's not right, and he's a horrible teammate, and he shouldn't be on the team. But the fact is, you get him the ball early, he'll play.
Just a little look ahead. Indianapolis at the 7th spot at 8-7. Houston at 8-7. They're basically the 8th seed at the moment. Mm-hmm. Indy gets the Raiders, Houston gets Tennessee, and then they face each other in the last game of the season, which could determine who is actually the seventh seed. So that's something to look for. Mm-hmm. NFC time. San Francisco at 11-4. We talked about them. They lost to Baltimore. Philadelphia at 11-4. They beat the Giants. Detroit moves to 11-4. They beat Minnesota. This was the good Detroit team that we saw. They had four interceptions. Goff had a passing touchdown. They ran three times. They had three running touchdowns, Detroit. Amon-Ra had a receiving touchdown. Darren, Detroit.
Well, Nick Mullins threw 411 yards against him. He just keeps throwing it to the wrong team. You know, it's funny, and he does it like in the red zone area. He gets picked off mostly on the other team side of the field. Minnesota, I thought, was the better team throughout the game. They actually were controlling a lot of it. The one thing you say, Detroit, first North Division title ever, NFC North ever. They've never won that division before, and their first division of any sort since 92. I mean, it's a pretty long run for them. So congratulations to the Lion fans. You know, happy for Detroit. Minnesota now has benched Mullins. They go back to Jaren Hall this week, who started one game, got hurt in the first quarter. Then they went to Josh Dobbs. Yeah, they went to Dobbs, who became a hero. Then Mullins became a hero. Now they're back to Hall. You know, we'll see what happens. Minnesota's still they play Green Bay this week. They're still in the heart of the playoff race. So a lot going on there. But congrats to Detroit.
All right. Tampa Bay's in the 4 seed. They're at 8-7. We talked about them. Dallas is in the 5 spot right now at 10-5. We talked about them. They lost to Miami. In the 6 spot is the Rams at 8-7. They beat New Orleans 30-22. Stafford threw for 2 touchdowns. Kyren Williams ran for a touchdown. Puka Nacua, 9 receptions, 164 yards and a touchdown. Darren?
I mean, the weapons that this team has, you're throwing Higbee on top of that with those two receivers, plus Atwell on the outside, and Stafford when healthy. You see what he can do. He's really that good. If the O-line holds up, the Rams are a team nobody wants to play, nobody wants to face. Right now, if the playoffs started today, Goff against Stafford. I think it'd be kind of fun to watch Detroit.
Absolutely.
Listen, the odds of that actually happening and it all staying the same, who knows? But the fact of the matter is, you get right now it would be Goff versus Stafford in the 3-6 matchup, which I think would be pretty cool.
All right. In the 7th spot is Seattle. They beat Tennessee 20-17. Geno Smith, 227-2. Seattle was down 10-6 going to the 4th quarter. Tennessee had a touchdown, but Seattle had 2 touchdowns, one with 224 left to secure the victory. Darren?
Okay, I'm going to take this from the Tennessee side. You're Ryan Tannehill, and you've been in the league for a long time. You can't take 2 sacks with no timeouts on the last drive. And they weren't, like, off the side where he didn't see them. They were both coverage sacks. It was horrible. I was just like, listen, I had no dog in the fight. I'm just sitting there yelling, like, how do you take a sack here? You've been in the league long enough. You have to get rid of the ball. If the guy's covered, you get rid of it. Second one may be a little quicker than the first one. First one was blatantly coverage. Second one, he still had time to unload it. I was stunned. But you know what? Seattle, same thing with Pete Carroll. Every time you write them off, they find a way to fight back. Now the two of them play each other this week with Seattle and Pittsburgh. The two teams that everybody wants to write off, and they yet they find a way to fight and keep themselves, you know, involved. Anyway.
All right. So Seattle's in the 7th spot at 8-7. Right underneath them, 4 teams have 7 wins. Minnesota, they lost to Detroit. Atlanta, they beat Indianapolis. Green Bay, they beat Carolina. And New Orleans, who lost to the Rams. Those are the 4 teams that are on the outside looking in at the minute. Darren?
Saints play the Bucs this week, so that's huge. And then Atlanta the week after plays the Bucs, I believe. They either play the Saints or the Bucs. I forget which one.
Saints.
They play the Saints the week after. So all these teams are fighting for that one spot. Green Bay and Minnesota play a lose-or-leave-town match this week. Basically, the loser's done. The winner stays around. We all loved wrestling when we were growing up. Lose-or-leave-town matches were important to us. And so you're going to have Jaren Hall against Love. Jair Alexander gets suspended from Green Bay this week, so he won't play at corner. against Justin Jefferson. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot going on out here. And Green Bay's defense does not look that impressive right now, giving up 30 to Carolina, who has trouble scoring like the Jets have trouble scoring. So, you know, it's fun. A lot of teams are involved. I still think there are too many teams in the playoff race, but it's fun to watch right now.
And the two coaches you mentioned about, you know, they always seem to stick around and be alive, Tomlin and Carroll, they face off against each other this week.
Yep,
absolutely. Steelers
Seahawks.
In Seattle.
All right. And that's the wrap for week 16. 2 weeks left on the calendar.
Just a couple things to note this week. Lions Cowboys, big game in Dallas. Lions won the division. Cowboys are like a 6-point favorite. It's crazy. Raiders Colts, two teams that are hanging around. Saints Bucks. Bucks can clinch the division or we can have a tie again. Bengals Chiefs, both kind of seem to need it right now. Steelers Seahawks, we just mentioned. Packers Vikings, lose or leave town. Dolphins Ravens. Ravens win it. They're the one seed. Dolphins win it. They're the one seed. And if you think the NBA is gaining on the NFL popularity, so viewers on Christmas Day, which is the NBA's day, NFL had 21.9 million viewers. The NBA had 4.3 million viewers. It's not really close.
And they weren't exactly thrilling Christmas Day games for the NFL.
No, they weren't great, but it's still 21-9.
They still crushed them.
I mean, and you know, and the NBA had their lineup. They had their big teams playing. You had New York playing. I mean, you had big markets out there. You had LA. You had
New
everybody
York, Boston,
playing.
Boston, LA.
Yeah, yeah, Boston versus LA. You had one of the best rivalries of all time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it still wasn't even close. That's just my shot at the NBA. Sorry. Jake, back to you.
No, and that's going to wrap it right now for the NFL. We'll come back for the picks. Darren, want to talk to us about a little college football? We got some bowl action going on.
Yeah, we're
going to
go through the bowls that have already gone through, and then we're going to talk about the semifinal, and we're going to give you our picks. Every other pick we're doing on Facebook and stuff like that, but we're going to give you those picks on the show tonight. So just a couple of reviews of a couple of things I saw that threw me off. So remember we talked South Alabama, Eastern Michigan spread was 17.5, 59-10, not a game. The most interesting part of this game is that after the game, sucker punch from Corey Hernandez just comes across the field while the South Alabama is celebrating and starts a brawl. I mean, you know, and then he had a reason, excuse, enough. It's time to, you shouldn't be able to play college football again. You can't do that. You got to learn sportsmanship.
You lost by 49 points. 10.
The fact is, South Alabama could have ran it up on you, and they really didn't. Another blowout, USF, crushed Syracuse, 45-0. Syracuse with 159 yards. They went one for 16 on third down. They had four turnovers in the game. Fact is that you wonder if the transfer from Ohio State is rethinking his thoughts of going to Syracuse. Georgia Tech 30, UCF 17. They were down 17-3 and scored the last 27 points of that game. Great job by Georgia Tech really taking the game over. Duke held off Troy 17-10. Both teams had 330 yards. There were one first down off of each other. One had 19, the other had 18. This is about as even a game as you could get. Troy just couldn't put it together to get into the end zone really late. Northern Illinois stopped Arkansas State 21-19. They stopped a two-point conversion with 109 left to play. Otherwise, it would have been a chance at overtime in that one. Georgia State, I'm sure this is one that Kev wants to talk about. Maybe not. Crushed Utah State 45-22. 643 yards of offense.
Yeah,
Utah State couldn't stop them. I mean, it was just like every time Georgia State touched the ball, they scored. It was like watching a miracle happen every time they touched the ball. There was no way to stop it. Air Force 31, James Madison 21. You might have the same stat as me. Go ahead, Kev.
I was just going to talk about the one drive Air Force had.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Up 28-14, late third quarter, 3 minutes left. Air Force eventually kicks the field goal. They go on a 17 play. The 17th play is the field goal. 49 yards. Gained in the first 16 plays of the drive. Took 9 minutes and 45 seconds. How is that even possible? That's Academy football at its finest.
They rushed for 351 yards in the game.
And threw for about 50. Three
yeah.
Five, I think.
Yep. 351 yards rushing.
Yeah.
Northwestern.
I mean, the, the fullback, 35 carries, 203 yards. Emmanuel Michel.
Yep.
No relation to Sony.
No.
I looked that up at the end. And, you know, he's a guy that you root for because, you know, Service Academy, he's a senior. 4 years, they're done.
Yep. There's no extra time.
No extra time, no rules, no anything. He's done. So he goes out with a really good performance.
Definitely. Northwestern 14, Utah 7, in a game that was just as exciting as that score leads you to believe it was. Utah committed 3 turnovers, never got back in it. This one probably surprised me the most. Coastal Carolina 24, San Jose State 14. San Jose State came in so hot. The biggest thing on this one, the coach of Coastal Carolina took a picture on the beach with the dance team. They were in their bikinis, and he was topless, and they made this big deal about it. I don't know what the world's coming to. It was nothing inappropriate. It was something that was planned. They took a picture in Hawaii. Maybe I'm an idiot. I don't know.
You mean they're wearing a bikini on the beach in Hawaii? Unheard of. I mean,
it was a planned thing. There were little thongs or anything. They were just wearing bikinis. They were posing with the coach who was wearing a bathing suit. Minnesota 30, Bowling Green 24. This is why bowls can kind of get cool sometimes. Cole Kramer, in his career, came into the game throwing 14 passes in 5 years. This is the last game he can play. His eligibility is up. And he found a way to lead a team in his first start ever in 5 years. They kept showing his fiance on screen, who's a very beautiful girl, by the way. It was almost like that year where I think it was McElroy's fiance in Alabama, where Brett Musburger kept gushing over her. I don't remember if it was McElroy or the quarterback before him.
No, it was, who was it? Her name was Webb. Something Webb? I forget.
Yeah, her name was Catherine Webb, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the quarterback's name.
Which quarterback was it? But whichever one, yeah.
Before McElroy, I know what you're talking about. I can't think of it. I think he got into play for Cincinnati for McCarron.
McCarron.
He would play for Cincinnati. They kept showing the fiance. The cool thing on this game, actually, in game-wise, was the running back Taylor, the freshman from Minnesota, rushed for 208 yards. He had been hurt since the Iowa game, and they had lost every game since he'd been out. Texas State beats Rice 45-21. This game was 21-21. Two pick sixes in the game. Rice turned the ball over 7 times, including 5 picks. You don't win games that way. 7-0 in the turnovers. Kansas over UNLV, 49-36. A little bit of a mini brawl at the end of that game, but it wasn't ridiculous. Bean threw for 449 and 6 touchdowns. 591 yards of offense for Kansas. Here's the exciting part. They committed 18 penalties for 210 yards. While the well-behaved UNLV team only committed 9 for 99. I mean, we had over 300 yards in penalties in this game. You know, sometimes you got to swallow the whistle a little bit. A lot of personal fouls called in this one. And Kevin and I both had UNLV getting 12 and a half. So yep. We lost by a point. Gino had Kansas minus 13 to anyone. Virginia Tech beat Tulane 41-20. Virginia Tech had 453 yards of offense, 362 on the ground. Broke open a 17-17 game, just took over. USC. Is this the other one you were going to talk about?
Yeah, unbelievable. With Miller Moss, the backup
quarterback there,
Caleb Williams, 372 and 6 touchdowns. He came in with 3 touchdowns in his first 3 seasons combined.
Played excellent in the game. So he threw 6 scores. Does this become another indictment on FSU not getting in, guys? Because their last win was the ranked win against Louisville. I'm just curious what you guys think.
I never thought of that.
I mean, wow. I was just thinking about it. Is this an indictment on FSU and saying that the committee got it right? I know Gino thought they might have got it right from the beginning. You and I were a little more adamant against. But, you know, just a thought.
Yeah.
And then West Virginia 30, North Carolina 10. Duke's Mayo Bath. That's the worst one. You actually, you know, they throw the mayonnaise on you. It's freaking brutal. More West Virginia fans in Charlotte than North Carolina fans. Yards were close, but 7 sacks, 2 forced turnovers, and a 78-yard punt return with a difference for West Virginia. Oklahoma State, I didn't analyze all the games today. I didn't get a chance to, but Oklahoma State beat Texas A&M 31-23. We talked about Ollie Gordon on Facebook. Also, Bowman threw for 402 and 2 touchdowns. So that's kind of where we were going into today. Today we had wins from Rutgers, Kansas State, and Boston College beat SMU, which kind of surprised me. And that's where we are with these current bowls. Any points to make before we go into the semifinals, boys?
No.
All right. Here we go. We'll start with the opener. Michigan, 1.5-point favorite against Alabama, the 1 versus the 4. Kev, why don't you tell us what you like in this game?
What I don't like is Jim Harbaugh's record in the bowl games. He's 1-6 in his career in the bowl games at Michigan, 0-2 in the college football playoff. Michigan, you take a look, they did beat up all those bad teams that they played early. Once he got into the tough part of the schedule, the last three games, Penn State, Maryland, which was a trap game, and Ohio State, you know, they barely won those games. They won by about a touchdown each game. They did beat up by an Iowa 26-0 in the championship game. Alabama doesn't feel like it's quite the dominant defense like it's been in the past, but I think that's countered by Milroe playing real, real well down the stretch here. He's improved as the season's gone on. You know, a lot of people keep talking that Texas loss early because that's what got Texas into the CFP here. 1.5 point, I mean, that really matches to me what this game is. This is really a toss-up game. And I'm going by pedigree. I'm going to take Alabama to win this game about 31-27.
All right, G, where you going, bro?
I kind of agree with Kev here. I'm thinking this is going to be an Alabama game. Something with Harbaugh in these bowl games, just something changes. I don't know. But I like Alabama in this game.
I hate to make it a clean sweep. But the fact that the SEC is 22-4 in non-conference BCS and college football playoff games, you know, is a huge stat. The SEC just dominates. Michigan's last bowl win was the Cotton Bowl in 2015. Bama usually wins these type of games. I feel like he gives Saban a month, and he usually finds a way to get things done. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, even though last year Michigan found a way to give up 51 to TCU, who didn't even show up against Georgia. So I'm going to say Alabama wins this game. I'm going to say that they win it 28-17. I think they'll win comfortably. A close game, but I think they'll find a way to win comfortably.
Late touchdown, make it 11?
Yeah, I think the game is going to be a 3 to 7 point game most of the way, and then maybe pull away late.
Okay.
All right, Gino, we'll let you lead with Washington, Texas, the nightcap on New Year's Day.
I like Penix in this game. I think he's got enough. Very unlike me to be taking two dogs in the semis here, but I'm taking Penix. I'm taking Washington with the 4 points. I like it. I think this could be a field goal game, so I'm happy to take the 4 with Penix. Give me Washington.
All right, Kev.
This is a rematch of last year's Alamo Bowl, which was run by Washington 27-20. Now they meet in the semifinal game. Texas, we've seen all year, they're a terrific team. Their only loss was to Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry on the last second score there. Washington, you feel like can struggle at times offensively, but when they get clicking, they've got the weapons at wide receiver, they've got Penix, and I think Texas's secondary can be shaky at times. And if Washington starts to get on the roll here, I agree with Gino. I see Washington winning a little bit of a higher scoring game than the other game. I see Washington winning something like 38-35 over Texas.
It sucks that we're doing this because everybody should by right bet Texas and Michigan. Okay, it's an intriguing match. Both teams have potent offenses and great quarterbacks. Okay, Washington has the better pass defense. Texas is better against the run. Okay, on defense. Both teams are balanced. It should be an offensive game. I'm very similar to you. I like the over of the 63.5.
Yep.
I have the game finishing out 41-38 Washington. I think it's going to come back. Kellen DeBoer, who's the coach of Washington, I think that they just keep finding ways to win one-score games. And I think it's another one of those type of games. I think Washington, who was completely disrespected against Oregon, I think they were an 11-point underdog on that one. Still 4-point underdog here. I said that Texas didn't belong in here, so I can't pick them, to be honest, after I make that kind of statement a couple of weeks ago. Texas was my 7. I didn't even have them as the 5, so I'm going to go with Washington in a close game. And wow. So everybody listening, please, by all means, pick Texas, pick Michigan.
Michigan,
and that's it for college football.
Michigan-Texas parlay, there's a big winner there.
And I got to be honest, I'm looking forward to both games. I think we have a chance at 2 really good games.
Yep.
There's no game where you're like, I don't see how this team can find a way. I think there's an argument for all four teams. So it makes it pretty cool.
All right. We'll go around the world of sports right now. We'll hit a couple of different things. Baseball, we'll start it off. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, 12 years, $325 million, plus a $50 million posting fee for the Dodgers. Dodgers spent over $1 billion between Ohtani, Yamamoto, and Glasnow. Ooh. Question with this is, where do the Yankees and Mets go? Because they're in the running for a starter. Snell's out there, Montgomery's out there, Giolito, Kershaw, Paxton, or do you flip it and go the other way and try to just stack your bullpen with somebody like Hader or Hicks out there, throw them in the bullpen with what you have? Guys, any comments on what the Yankees Mets? Any, first off, any comments on the Dodgers here, first off?
Well, I'm going to make my comment anti-Yankee and anti-Met right now. Okay, the Mets are not a destination yet. Steve Cohen's got more money than God, and Steve Cohen has to leave that last negotiation with whatever they offer you. I'm giving you 20 million more. If he wants him, if you want him, you're flying to Japan and you're doing that. The last thing that can be said, you can't be able to be matched. You got to say, come to me last. I will beat their offer. If you still choose to go with them, despite the fact I'm going to beat their offer, so be it. But you know what? The Mets aren't the Yankees or the Dodgers yet. And unfortunately, until they build up that reputation, they haven't won in a long time. They have to outbid you to get a guy like Yamamoto. For the Yankees, pathetic. You can't come out and make a public statement, we want Yamamoto. And you got Judge on the discount. You weren't having the highest bid. This is the New York freaking Yankees. You're getting outbid by everybody. You think you're going to get a discount? What the hell's wrong with you? I can't have Cashman and Hal coming out talking about how we're going to get this guy, and then you get outbid. That's an embarrassment. George rolling over in the grave.
Absolutely.
That's how embarrassing this is.
It is.
As a Yankee fan, I don't think I've been this embarrassed since 2004. I'm not joking. That's how serious I take this one. Because you're sitting there with a guy that you say you want, and you get outbid. They spend more money than you. I know Cohen's the richest owner. I'm not saying he's not. I know the Dodgers have all this money too. But the Yankees are the richest franchise. You print money at Yankee Stadium. And the kid would pay for himself with just the amount of royalties you get from overseas, from everything that would happen. So don't give me the, we can't go above $300 million because we don't want it to be more than Cole. Bullshit. Cole wants to win. They all want to win. If you like this, and listen, none of us know what Yamamoto is. We've seen a couple of highlights. Yamamoto could be Urabu. We have no idea. We don't know. But what we do know is this. The Yankees embarrassed themselves, and the Mets didn't play it right, in my opinion. Kev?
Yeah, you're right. The Mets are still the second class is in New York. Like you said, they're not the destination for players if they're coming to New York. I don't want to hear any more about Steve Cohen's money. You know, if the Dodgers are going out there and spending $1 billion, you know, the rest of the league can shut up about the Mets spending money. As far as what do we do next, I'm going to leave you to talk about the Yankees. To me, you know you've got Senga, Quintana, and Severino. You need a guy that you know is going to throw winnings. I'm willing to give, you know, Giolito one plus an option, assuming he comes in for that. If Giolito comes in and gives you 180 innings and somewhere around a 3.8 ERA, you know, I'm not asking for a Cy Young caliber. I'm just asking for guys who can go out there and give me innings at a respectable level. And I think Giolito can do that. You know, a little bit bigger park, maybe cut down the home runs. That's who I want to see in that rotation. And I don't want Snell. I think he's going to be a huge overpay for somebody. He doesn't pitch enough innings. He's too wild, too inconsistent with walks. Has had two great years for Cy Youngs. Has not been good the other years in his career. Montgomery, if he comes in around 500, I'd be all in for that. Want to go a little higher than that, that's fine. But if you're going to get up to about 150 for him for 5 years, no way. Let somebody else take him. Imanaga, the other Japanese pitcher, is still out there. He's a guy I'd be very interested in. And if you were to go out there and get Giolito, Imanaga, and you still have Senga, Quintana, Severino, they're going to have to go with, I'm going to call it a 5.5-man rotation at least. You got to need a 6-man going through when you are playing bunch of days regularly. And that's where Hauser and Lucchese and Budo come into play. I think Tyler McGill should be moved to the bullpen. I think his stuff may have a chance to play better in the bullpen. We've seen him start. He's not a starter in the major league level. I want to see him in the bullpen. The Mets need to get a few more bullpen pieces. But, you know, as far as the pitching staff, the starting pitcher, that's what I would look for them to do. Guys, what about from the Yankees?
G, me or you? Me? I go Penn. I go Hader and I go Hicks. And I go with Holmes. And I probably pick up a marginal fourth of another fourth starter. And you know, and basically probably trade Glaber to get a couple other arms in the organization and kind of do it that way. I don't think that you can win it. You know, and listen, when I take Montgomery, yeah, he was a Yankee. I have no problem with him. I don't want Hader. I don't think we're even inconsiderate. I'm not Hader. I'm sorry. I don't want Snell. I got my Padres confused. Yeah. I apologize. but yeah, for the same reason, normally you'd love a lefty at Yankee Stadium, but I just don't trust Snell. I really would go bullpen. G?
I brought him into the conversation purposely because that's exactly what I would do. If I'm the Yankees at this point, you didn't get Yamamoto, which was the prize. You don't want Snell. You know what? I actually agree with Kev. If you tell me Montgomery's at 110, okay. But even if you do get him for the Yankees, I want Hader here also. You know, Montgomery at 150 plus, just, I don't know. You know, listen, he pitched well. He pitched well for St. Louis. He went to Texas. He pitched well for Texas. But do I really want to throw 160 at him? And then, you know, I'm going to be looking at dealing with Nestor Cortez coming back from an injury, Carlos Rodon, and Montgomery as my 2-3-4. I'm not sold on that. I would do exactly what you said. I'd go Hader, to be honest. But we'll see what's going on.
I'd go both. I'm being honest. I'd go both. I know that might be an overspend, but I would go Hader and Hicks. I'd go both.
So here's where the Yankees have the advantage. They don't have a true closer, so Hader is available for coming in and being the closer. The Mets, I mean, he won't go to the Mets because he's not going to be the closer. Diaz will be. And yeah, there's a
as he should be.
Ego that says Hader's not going to come in and be the setup guy.
That is exactly why I brought Hicks into the conversation, by the way.
Yeah. Hicks, I think, is the setup guy. That would be enticing to both the Mets and the Yankees. Yankees have the advantage. The Yankees have the ace. They have Gerrit Cole. You know, you're hoping for, you know, Cortez, you're hoping for the bounce back. You're hoping, I mean, the key to the Yankee season next year is going to be Carlos Rodon. Is he going to pitch up to that contract? Is he going to bounce back and become a legitimate two. If he is, then you guys are fine. Then the Yankees are fine with what they've got. You know, it's assuming they pick up, they still need another starter.
Yeah, they're still short.
But you know, you're talking about a fourth starter at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Yankees have a lot of five inning pitchers outside of Cole, and I would just rather heavy up on that pen. Listen, I like Giolito too. I would consider him to be one of my guys as well.
All right, where do you guys want to go next? Pick one, Darren.
On me. Let's do a quick college hoops thing, okay? So three unbeaten teams left. You got Ole Miss at 12-0, and they've played a couple of decent teams. They beat NC State and Memphis, and they won at UCF. You got Houston at 12-0. They had a home win against A&M. They won at Xavier and at Utah. And the other team was James Madison, who was also 12-0. Seven of those wins are on the road, including Michigan State, Kent State, and Fresno State. So, you know, these are the three teams that are unbeaten right now. There are two teams that are winless, Mississippi Valley State, where the SWAC always has a bunch of teams with 0 or 1 win at this time, and they, once again, live up to that lofty status. And the other one is Detroit Mercy with Detroit now. They're 0-13 going in. So those are the two teams that are – you know, have yet to win. Hopefully they'll get off the snide. You don't like to see anybody go through the whole thing. We'll talk about the Pistons later. Candidate, I should say, for game of the year, Florida Atlantic 96, Arizona 95, double overtime. Amazing early season game. FAU had everyone back, and they were loaded. Zona had a lot of people back, and they brought in Caleb Love from North Carolina. This game went back and forth. John L. Davis leading the way on one side, Caleb Love on the other. Now, Florida Atlantic, no fluke from last year. Everybody back, and this game was played in Vegas. So it was a pretty much of an Arizona crowd, and FAU found a way to win this game. Team to watch. I mean, I know that they stole everybody's, heart in the tournament a little bit last year with how well that they played. But they're back, running it back really quick. The one thing I'll say also is one of the biggest questions we have is May, the head coach, is May going to stick it out there and try to make it the Gonzaga of the East, or is he going to take a contract and move on? That's really one of those questions going to happen, if he's going to do what Few did or if he's going to move on. Other two quick points. St. John's, they won their opening conference game over Xavier last week. Then they gave UConn all sorts of trouble, fell 69-65. Giants can be good. Patino's got the guys playing hard. I mean, in this area, if St. John's is good, it's something really cool to watch. So hopefully they are. And finally, Louisville, 5-7. Kenny Payne's got to be fired. Louisville is a proud program. They can't be off a year like they had last year, be 5-7 this year. It's just disgusting. So those are my college hoops points. I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that, but just a couple of quick things. We'll get more into it as the new year comes about.
Yeah, very, very quiet now with everybody on spring winter break in the college.
Exactly.
Very few games right now. Everybody's focused on football in the colleges. So like I said, after we get through the bowl games and some and the end of the NFL regular season, we'll get more into college basketball.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right.
Kev, where do you want to go next?
Since you briefly mentioned it, NBA. Let's go there.
Go for it.
The reason I got distracted before, my son came down all excited. The big Boston Celtics fan. They survived, beat the Pistons in overtime. Pistons 28 straight losses. Ties the all-time record for, you know, single season, overlapping two seasons, anything. 28 straight losses for an NBA team. That's incredible. And the other team that had the lone losing streak, San Antonio, they've lost five in a row since winning against the Lakers a couple weeks ago. They've lost 23 of 24. I've never seen two teams this bad in the NBA at once.
No, it's pretty hard to watch.
Yeah.
One other point for the NBA, Ja Morant is back, and so is Memphis. They won four in a row since he's returned. This guy's a special player. If he can keep his head on straight, he's just a special talent to watch.
Locally, the Knicks, you know, they did get their big win on Christmas Day. They did beat the Bucks, so that was good for them. They're 5-5 in the last 10. They're just treading water. They really miss Robinson. They had Sims injured. They brought in Taj Gibson. They desperately need to make a move here. RJ Barrett has not been shooting the ball well for the last month. He's really struggling. They're missing something. And if they want to compete, they're going to have to make a move.
I agree. A lot of drama this week with Becky Hammon coming out talking about Jalen Brunson being a really good player, but he's too small to be like a superstar type, a super, superstar. I don't know what your thoughts were.
I didn't even hear that.
Yeah, it was a big deal. A lot of people were offended that she said that Jalen Brunson isn't great. And she's like, I love Jalen Brunson. It's just that he's not, they need another big player to make this team better. And I think they're right. RJ Barrett's never going to be a good shooter. He's just not. It's like watching, Brown over in Boston turn it over. RJ Barrett's that same enigma to me. He can't shoot. And DiVincenzo's a nice player and he can give you spark points, but you need someone that's consistent. You need someone like Damian Lillard going to Milwaukee was, you know. Yep. Not saying you're getting Damian Lillard, but you know, you need that kind of player.
And then that's off their rough stretch here. They were 12-9 and 2.5 weeks ago they went out west. Five games in 8 days. They went 1-4, came home, had a day off, played the Knicks, lost, day off, had back-to-back Denver and Detroit. Had a couple days off, then back-to-back again, Detroit and Milwaukee. So they're lucky they had the two games against Detroit. But some controversy because, like, Michael Bridges came out and was very against being rested. the Nets gave up the game against Milwaukee. They looked at their schedule. And really, when you look at their schedule as a whole, you know, two sets of back-to-backs within a week after, you know, not having really any time off after going out west, a long stretch there, back-to-backs in the next couple of days as well the next week, then another four-game road trip. You know, this is a team that, you know, when you look at the schedule, you can sort of understand them given the guys the rest and understanding that, you know, they're not going to beat Milwaukee. why not give them the day?
I like my play of fighting and saying he wants to play. I understand the move that they did. And I think those Pistons games are a lot more pressure-filled, as you don't want to be the team that loses to them. So even though Detroit's not a good team, those, and they were down in the fourth quarter in the second one and had to come back. Yeah. I think there's a lot of pressure in those games. Nobody wants to be the one that loses to Detroit. And you know, it's going to be somebody, but Detroit was 2-1. And now they're 2-20. They start off 2-1.
I think the Celtics felt that tonight. They were down 19.5.
Yeah, it's a pressure-filled game. It's almost like, I'm not going to call it a playoff game, but it's got that kind of atmosphere to it.
Yep.
All right. Darren, where do you want to go next?
Well, just a quick point on hockey. And it's not even, you know, I mean, listen, I happened to, by the way, I was coaching a Devil game last night. And the Columbus Devil game was actually really entertaining. The Devils are so potent when they get that puck and they're moving it. It's just, they're just an explosive team to watch. And, you know, it just seems like when they're on the power play, even though they haven't been clicking lately, that team's going to be great. The Islanders, on the other hand, had a night of shame. Letang had 6 assists. I think 5 in the second period, which was a record.
Yep.
Wow. I mean, you don't expect them to lose 7-0 to anybody. Rangers continue to play pretty well. But the one point I wanted to bring up, and then you guys can comment, and it's not NHL, but hockey's governing body in Newfoundland has banned post-game handshakes after a series of incidents. So this is how we're going to teach sportsmanship now. You don't shake your opponent's hand anymore. We just want to keep you separated. This is where we're going in this world. You know what? One of the coolest things about hockey is after a 7-game series where you've beaten each other up, you get on that freaking line and shake hands of your opponent. Even Claude Lemieux, and after he did the Chris Draper thing, I forget, was it Shanahan? I'm trying to remember who it was that said, I can't believe I shook his hand. It was someone, maybe it was McCarty. But, I mean, it's like one of those type of scenarios where it's part of what makes hockey special. And Newfoundland has decided, oh, no, teams are getting into arguments, so we don't want to do this. You know, listen, you can't soften every sport this much. And that's what I got on hockey, boys.
Kev, any hockey points before we move on?
No, he made my point about the Islanders, and yeah, that's about it.
Anything else before we move to NFL picks, Darren?
I think Kev had boxing.
Yeah, so this weekend, 2 former heavyweight champions, both with tune-ups, looking forward to a big fight in March, maybe try to get back into the heavyweight title picture. Anthony Joshua won by stoppage. Took care of his opponent real easy. But Deontay Wilder, he was about a -700 favorite against Joseph Parker and lost by unanimous decision, where the scores weren't even that close. It was like 118-110, 118-109, and 120-108. He just did not show up. They had this big fight set up for March 9th that they were going to fight, and that's been scuttled. The next big heavyweight fight is going to be in about 2 months. It's going to be Tyson Fury and Usyk. And after that, I don't know what's left for Fury if he wins that one.
There ain't much. No, we haven't
he's beaten everybody.
He's beaten everybody he had to beat, I mean, including Wilder. I mean, there's stuff to kind of like about what you saw with Parker the other day. He just kind of took it to Wilder. Wilder's just loading up for a right hand, and Parker kind of came in ducking the right hand the entire time. It was like a clinic, and Wilder has no idea how to change his approach during a fight. A lot of fighters don't, but a guy that had his kind of record, you expect would, and he has no game plan for it.
All right. It is time for Week 17 NFL picks.
I was awful.
Last week, Darren 0-3, Kev 2-1. Gino finally had a good week at 3-0. The overall record, 71-73. We're getting close to 500, guys. We need to pull this out. I have the T-box. I'm going to – the first team I'm taking is the game in play, and I said this to Darren earlier.
I know you did.
It is the game that I actually liked on the schedule. Cleveland minus the 7.5 against the Jets. They are currently up 17. I'm looking okay in the fourth quarter, but there's plenty of time left. We'll see how this turns out. My second game is I'm taking the Rams minus 5.5 against the Giants. I think the Rams got a little something going here. I think they keep it up. Do they get into the playoffs? I don't know. But I think they have enough right now to get this win, and then they'll see what happens as they hit the last week of the season when they play San Francisco. Rams is my second game. My third pick, I'm taking the Raiders plus the points against the Colts. I agree with Kev. Kev talked about Antonio Pierce early. I think he's got these guys doing all sorts of things for him. They're saying Josh Jacobs may be back on the field this week. We'll see how that goes. The Raiders on my third pick, plus 3.5. Kev?
All right. I'm going to hit some of the big games this weekend. First game, the battle for the NFC South. I'm going to take Tampa Bay laying the 2.5 at home against the Saints. I think the fact that it's under a field goal gives Tampa Bay enough to win. I mean, they'll win by at least a field goal. So that's my first pick. My second pick, I know Dallas has been very strong at home, but I think Detroit wants to go in and prove themselves. This is a big proving test for the Lions. I'm going to take the Lions plus 5.5 going into Dallas. And my third game, the battle for the top spot in the AFC, let's go with the Ravens. I'm rooting against Miami, so might as well go all in and pull for the Ravens to cover also. I've got 3.5, so you know, is it down to 3?
Down to 3, bud.
Okay, so field goal pushes. But I'll take the Ravens minus the 3 at home against the Dolphins.
I love your Tampa Bay pick, by the way. That was my last game that I really, really liked this week. Darren, who do you like?
I'm going to start off with the Sunday night game. I'm taking the Vikings minus 1 against the Packers. I think that the Packers D, not good. I think the loss of Jaire Alexander and no one to cover Jefferson and Osborne and Addison and the rest of those guys. I think that Minnesota will simply outscore them in this game. I like Minnesota to win that game at home. I got a couple of head-to-heads with you guys, so I'm trying to think of which one. I'm going to go Atlanta plus 3 against the Bears. I think Atlanta's still in the fight. I think Chicago's out of the fight. I'm going to take Heineke to lead Atlanta for a road victory. I think that they find a way to get that done. And I kind of have both Indy and New Orleans listed on my sheet. I'm going to take the Colts minus 3.5 against the Raiders. The Raiders did absolutely nothing last week and won the game because the Chiefs gave it to them. They didn't impress me at all. They couldn't throw the ball to save their life. I think if O'Connell's forced to throw the ball and they're trailing, I think he'll give the ball to the Colts at least twice. I think that the Colts find a way to win this game and bounce back after an embarrassing game against the Falcons last week. So I'm going Minnesota minus 1, Indy minus 3.5, Atlanta plus 3. And those are my picks. You guys have anything else before we come out? And I like the Saints, by the way. Plus 2.5. Not that it counts. I just want this to be an exciting week 18.
Yep.
So I want the Saints to win it. I guess we'll wrap up then. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, and fun world of sports. Please download the podcast anywhere you get our podcast, any podcast, actually, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever. We share things on social media. We're doing a lot of the bowl stuff now. Also, always do the NFL and keep that going. And we'll do some college sports going forward. So, please like, share, comment. Tell us what you want to hear. Tell us what you don't want to hear. But get involved. Tell us what you're looking for. Gino, you about to make a point?
We'll see you in the new year.
Yes, we will. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you in 2024. There you go.
Oh, O'Reilly. check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.